You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another Monday. Always happy to have our listening audience out there with us. Some of our members, our listeners, will remember that a while back I interviewed a couple young fellows from the Johnson City, Tennessee area who had gone to school together down there at East Tennessee State and gone out and started a business and got their perspectives. And it got me thinking that as often as I have the opportunity, I need to have young surveyors on the show. And, of course, I've explained to these two young fellows who are with me today that to me young is anybody under 50, but they certainly fit that category, no question about it. But I met Stan Ard and Bradley, B.J. Roberts, I don't know, a month or so ago, I guess.
Yeah, a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I was in Baton Rouge at a committee meeting that I'm not on. I was just sitting with that committee or a task force, one of the NCAAS task forces. And during one of our days of deliberations, Stan and BJ came in and talked with the group, and I was real impressed with both of them. And so as we went on through the day, I asked the two of them if they could join me on the show at some point and give their perspectives on what they're doing and their backgrounds and even further into where this whole profession is going. Because BJ and Stan, I guess y'all know, I guess you work with enough old people like me that we're all sitting around wringing our hands wondering what's going to happen when we're not around anymore. Like that, we're something special. But what we're finding is that, that at least from my perspective, the profession's going to be in really good hands. So with that brief introduction, I'll welcome you both to the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr, for having us.
We appreciate it.
Maybe as we get started here, each of you could spend a little bit of time and just talk about what you're doing now, and later on I want to get into your backgrounds and what your path was getting into surveying, because like so many of us, it wasn't necessarily targeted that way in the very beginning. But maybe talk about what you're doing right now. So, Stan, if you'd start out and let people know where you're working and kind of what you're doing.
Ms. Kurt, I'm a land surveyor with the Louisiana Department of Transportation Development, and I've been here for about 4 years. And currently what I do is I estimate topographic surveys. We have five in-house survey crews that do topographic surveying, and whenever we get a large topographic survey or something we don't want to do in-house, we'll sub out to a consultant, and I go out to estimate it and work with those consultants regarding man-hours fees, and we set that up. And our main clients is our road design, bridge design section, and it's all about making bridges and roads. Now,
what your topographic surveys that you're talking about? I'm assuming that's something like when I worked for the DOT in Virginia a couple of centuries ago, it seems like. But what we, I guess it's probably the same thing we call location surveys, where
that's correct.
You're gathering data to build something of some sort.
We're giving a base set of drawings to the designer so they can design their project off of.
Right, and now is your office tied to the design arm, or are you kind of independent?
No, location survey is a separate entity altogether. Headquarters here at DOTD in Baton Rouge, it's its own section.
So when you're located in Baton Rouge as a sort of the State Department area, do you have satellites around the state at all, and what we used to call districts?
Yeah, so they do have districts in each district. Not all districts have surveyors, but we're kind of the main surveyor for the state, I guess you could say. A lot of the district surveyors handle small projects. Larger projects all come through headquarters and are assigned any survey needs assigned a location survey. And we have an administrator and some assistant administrators, and they'll assign a duty. The administrator will assign duties wherever it be a right-of-way project or a topographic survey project, and they have field operations as well.
Right. And, y'all, I'm just thinking from DOT experiences and an office like yours in a lot of states would probably also be concerned with whatever control network you use, and I assume the state has some sort of
a
universal network. But.
Well, we have a network of control, but we always live by NGS standards. We go with the current control network, the NGS is utilizing at the time, the most up-to-date network at the time. And right now that's 12A. We utilize that. We set GPS control at the beginning of a project. We'll go out and do static sessions, and then we do multiple static observations, and that's what that that's what that network stays, that datum stays with that project from beginning to end. If, you know, 10 years from now when that project goes to construction, you're using the datum that was done. You have to use just localized control at that time. We don't go in and change anything to update to current geoids or anything like that.
So you end up setting control markers of sorts on a project basis?
We do it on a project basis. We set up. Try to get it as permanent as possible, but we set control on each project, and then we go from there. Now, the state does have a GPS network called GovNet, and they also likely has a network down here called SmartNet. But the accuracy standards we found, it's not to the, you know, the accuracy we found with those networks is not near to the quality that we need. So that's why we use the each project we have our own control.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was working DOT, or even when I was in business, we in the mountains and the hard rock country here in Virginia, we set something in the ground. We always figure it's going to stay there. I guess you don't always have that option.
Well, no, due to subsidence, that's a dirty word down here in South Louisiana, especially. We definitely had subsidence is a major issue down here, and we live and learn it. I mean, I've been to a lot of control points, so I've gone back the next year, and now in coastal areas, you know, it'll move a tenth, and you know it's subsidence. I mean, it's just, especially with the road between Fouchon and Grand Isle, we just recently did a project, and we went back and touched some control points that we had done a year before, and they actually moved. It's just the nature of the beast up here.
Yeah, that just goes to show local knowledge of where you're working is as important as anything else you learn, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. It'll burn you if you don't. It'll burn you.
Well, BJ, I caught a little bit of the conversation you and Stan were having when I first came on the line a while ago, and it sounds to me like you've probably already been to the field this morning. Is that right?
I have, yeah. I work for a small engineering and land surveying company here in Baton Rouge. We got a satellite office in Florida that we only do engineering out of, a small environmental office over in the Mandeville area in Louisiana. We're real small. Like I said, we're primarily engineering. I coordinate and run a two crew survey department. So it allows me a little bit of flexibility in regards to mixing it up. I'll go out in the field probably 60% of the time and stay in the office 40% of the time, which is how I like it. You know, get to be more hands on with my guys.
Right, and obviously being an engineering firm, I would assume that a good part of your work is tied to whatever those projects are. Do y'all get into purely survey jobs as well?
Yeah, we do we actually do a lot of work with Stan's office over at DOTD. We've been blessed with some of those task orders for larger scale jobs for the state, and we do a good bit of work with USDA, NRCS, the department for restoration for wetlands areas here in Louisiana. So that's been a good project for us, and like I say, we do a lot of in-house design with Stan. We'll get a task from those guys, and we'll do the survey and then move into design for engineering.
Yeah, Stan, do you guys have contractors? And I hate to call professionals contractors, but I guess you do contractors.
We do. DOTD has,
like BJ.
We do. We have there's two ways to get a contract. You can either get a retainer contract, we do what's a task order, or we actually do advertisements as well. We'll advertise a specific project. Recently, we just advertised for a scanning project right here in front of the governor's mansion here at DOTD. And then we also have retainer contracts, which right now we – topographic retainer contracts, we have about four or five right now that are just specifically topographic survey. And then, of course, our right-of-way section also has boundary – retainer contracts as well, and it's a grading system. You know, it's based on past performance you've done, and experience, and personnel, and size of the firm, so on and so forth. How those are ordered.
Do y'all have? I'm again thinking back to my own experiences when the DOT in Virginia, I think, had eight or nine what we call districts, and I guess y'all have something similar to that. Maybe not as many districts, but.
That's correct. We have, I don't know how many districts it is right off the top of my head, but it's eight or nine plus or minus districts throughout the state. And they They don't do any consulting out. Like all the contractual type work for surveying goes out through location survey here at headquarters. The district's mostly full with like turn lanes, small little projects, intersection improvements, most roundabouts, that kind of stuff goes through headquarters, or bigger scale project, widening projects mostly go through headquarters. And the big push here lately has been interstate work, of course, because you get a higher federal match.
Sure, yeah. And BJ, do y'all, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is from a development side, land development side, everybody's been down for a while. Is it picking back up in where you all are, or are you seeing much?
You know, we have seen in the recent past months we have seen a little increase in land development. We've been getting a little bit more calls regards to private surveys and that kind of thing. Being small the way we are as far as our surveying department goes, some of those things we kind of have to punt them to some of our associates, just get tied up with some of these bigger projects and just hate to say don't have time for smaller residential work, but we've got prior commitments and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think overall we have seen a little bit of an increase in regards to residential surveys.
Yeah, I guess it people listening from around the country and thinking back over the last few years, to hear somebody say that they don't have time to do things is kind of music to everybody's ears, because it seems like there's been so much sitting around on our hands for a while that it's kind of nice to see that things are maybe starting to come back. And
have you heard reports in regards to increases, not only in Louisiana but other states as well?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I talk to people all the time from different parts of the country, and there are lots of folks out there that are just saying they're, really, really busy again. And
that's a good thing.
That's great.
And glad to be busy, as you all can imagine.
No, that is. It's nothing worse than waiting around for a phone call, begging for work,
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with, and it sounds like BJ and his company are handling this pretty well. A lot of that has to do in any climate about, how well diversified you are and what you can do. Sometimes folks concentrate on one item that surveyors can do, and then if that particular segment happens to go down, then it's a problem.
Oh, it's good to be diversified. I mean, there's been many a company fail because of that, because they were just doing core work, or they were just doing DOT work, or just doing just private work, for mom and pop resub. There's no doubt diversification is definitely the way to be.
Yeah, I recall when I first moved to this part of the world, we got about 20 seconds before the break, but my boss told me we didn't need to go out and find other things because he had enough work to bury us. Well, 2 years later, all the work we had was what we'd gone out and found after the fact.
after you were sitting at the house.
We're coming up to the break, so we'll go take that break, and we'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's quickstake.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everybody, to NSPS Radio Hour. We're here with Stan Ard and B.J. Roberts, young fellows from Louisiana. We talked about in the first section what you guys are kind of doing here, and I don't want to cut that short, but one of the things that I was not intrigued by necessarily, but I found interesting when you guys were talking to the group there that day, was the path. You know, we, the survey community, if you will, are looking down the road at where's the next generation coming from and all those kind of things, and we look at the people that are enrolled in our four-year programs and our two-year programs, and we're nervous because a lot of those programs aren't as strong as we'd like them to be and don't have as many students in them, and then, of course, the number of professors is not so great either, but there are other paths to get there that I think all states really recognize. And as I was listening to both of your stories, they were somewhat similar, not exactly the same, but in terms of you were looking at doing something else, and then you saw this opportunity, and it sort of fit with your thought processes about what you wanted to do and how you wanted to do it. So maybe I don't know who wants to start. Maybe BJ, you can start this time. Talk a little bit about your path and how you ended up at surveying.
Okay, yeah, Mr. Skirt, I guess my dad worked for the state land office, which is a separate state office from DOTD, and he was a field surveyor, you know, not licensed or anything. He just worked on one of the crews, and I guess recently retired a couple of years back, but he also on Fridays would do some field work for a licensed land surveyor, that didn't work for the state land office. And I spent my summers with him. You know, he was kind of rough on me. He wanted me to get out there and work. Ain't gonna be no sitting up in the house in the summertime when I was in high school. So he put me to work with him, and I kind of got into it a little bit and decided that was something. It was a profession that I would never do. I just decided that I was going to do something else. At heat and snakes and wasps and all that good stuff, that was something I didn't want to get into. And graduated high school and went to college. And I tell everybody, I tasted all the colleges. I started up at Louisiana Tech and got up there. It's about, I'd say it's probably 5 hours from home, and didn't go up there with any of my friends or anything, and went up there and got enrolled and got an apartment, and everything was good. And that first week of class set in, and I started missing mama's cooking real good, and decided to call them up and see if I could come home, and they got me enrolled at Southeastern there in Hammond, and I moved back down and started going there, and took a couple of years worth of school there, and decided to change my major over to civil engineering and transferred to LSU. And I got through my first semester in civil and decided that surveying calling was coming back to me. So I started looking into that process a little bit, and what I needed to go through to become a licensed land surveyor, and ended up transferring to Nicholls State University, and that's where I finished. I think I took my PS exam in 2013, I believe. So I've been licensed about 2 years now. And that was pretty well the process for me. It was kind of unwanted exposure to the profession, when I was younger, and as I got older and more mature, I just came back to it. It was a trade that, you know, that my dad taught me, and it was something that I knew, and I've always been an outdoors kind of guy, and I knew it was a profession that would, you know, that would offer a good salary and some flexibility as far as office work to field work kind of thing. So it was just a good fit for me.
How is the program at Nicholls State doing?
I tell you the truth, Mr. Kurt, I can't necessarily speak for how the program is doing. I can speak from my personal experience with the program. You know, when I was there, it still is, from what I understand, a fairly small program. You know, comparing it to other programs at the college, you know, I think we had two professors when I was there, and it was a difficult process, you know, to get courses scheduled and meet prerequisites when the course offerings were few and far between. It was, like I say, it was a tough process. I don't currently know how the program's doing or what its outlook is. But it was a rough road, when I was in school.
How about you, Stan?
Well, Mr. Kurt, I started off as a boundary line painter. During high school, my summer jobs, I did that for three or four summers in southwest Mississippi and south Louisiana, where I worked for various timber companies, and we worked for the Forest Service some, and I enjoyed it. I really just enjoyed the aspect of being in the outdoors and part of the hunt, you know, the investigation, getting out there when you see that X in that tree and looking for that property corner, whether it be a pipe or a buggy axle or a pine knot. And from that point, when I was in high school, I knew I wanted to go towards surveying. And once graduating high school, I enrolled my first semester at LSU in civil engineering with the intent of going after surveying. At that point, I had not worked for a surveyor yet. And I went to LSU, and as you know, LSU is probably one of the top party schools in the nation. And my freshman year, I majored in whiskey and women. Moved back home, got my head on right, and I decided to go at it a different – I didn't really – once I was at LSU in civil engineering, I kind of educated myself as, you know, civil engineers don't just – you know, surveying is one small thing of engineering. You know, they do bridge design, road design, sewerage design, and that really wasn't where I wanted to go. And I had met with a gentleman by the name of Mr. Glenn Kent, who was our administrative director of LaPel's board at the time. And he told me that I could go the path of maybe a forestry degree with that minor in surveying, and that's where I went. My family, my father was a forester, and my grandfather was in the forestry business, and I decided I wanted to go that route because I had a lot of interest to be in the woods. And once I got that degree in forestry, I went on and achieved my minor in surveying from LSU. And probably my sophomore year, I started working for a boundary surveyor and just enjoyed the heck out of it. And really, you know, from the point where I was a rodman all the way out, I enjoyed being out in the woods with the wasps and the water moccasins and everything else. And I worked for once I got out of school, I worked for a pretty large engineering firm. We had nine survey crews, between six and nine here in Livingston Parish, Louisiana, and we had about four or five licensed surveyors also, which was a great grounds for me to learn how to be a surveyor when you have that many mentors working for you. And I was licensed in 2009 in Louisiana, and I'm also licensed in the state of Mississippi.
So both of you had a little bit of touch of it, or taste of it, when you were growing up. It wasn't totally foreign.
No. It was definitely a path I saw at an early age I wanted to go. And you know, once I got into college and started working with surveyors, I saw there was a bright opportunity for a young surveyor to grow up in it, you know, and a bright future.
What is your situation in terms of going toward the license in Louisiana? Like when you, after you get out of school, you have a certain amount of time, you still have to work under somebody before you can take the final. Now, were you all able to take the fundamentals right when you graduated, or did you
I waited a little while, but you can actually, you can take the fundamentals before you graduate in the state.
I see.
And from what I understand now, Mr. Kurt, it's a it's a computer test. I mean, you can schedule it and go take it pretty much any time. I don't know if it's BJ, do you know if it's an April and October only, or can you just call up and schedule it any time?
No, I think they offer that thing. There's a lot more offerings for the computer-based testing for the fundamentals, and from what I understand, I think the plans will be a computer-based testing for the PS exam as well. With a state-specific exam separate, and that's my understanding of the process or the plans.
Yeah, that's true. They've got, I think all the states now have adopted the computer-based testing for the first exam, for the fundamentals exam, and as y'all said, it's not just twice a year. It's not on call necessarily,
right,
where you can just call up and say, "I want to come over and do it," but it is available more times than just on those. You know, used to be just on a particular day, once in the spring and once in the fall, but that has changed. And actually, part of that meeting that you all attended there in Baton Rouge was talking about some of those ramifications of computer-based testing and where it's heading next, because, as you mentioned, the next level is to get to where the principles and practice exam is going to be computer-based as well. And as a matter of fact, we got a little bit of time here before we go to break, but I'm interested in you all's perspectives about that in terms of, that whole process of taking the fundamentals when you get out of school, or in, I don't know, does Louisiana still allow anybody to get a license if they don't have the degree?
No, you have to have a degree in the state.
Okay, so in your case, somebody can't just work their way in.
No, sir, there's no experience clause in this state.
Right, and, you know, all of our states used to be that way.
Yes, sir.
Right.
With the experience clause, and a lot of people came in that way. But as time goes on, and as Louisiana has done, it's gotten to the point where you've got to have that certain level of education. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit, too, because there's so many things that's in surveying today that weren't in surveying, especially on the technological side, that's hard to pick up just from the experience base.
No doubt.
Because it depends on what your mentor knows, right?
That's it. And one thing we have in this state is an interview. All applicants, before they sign up to take the professional test, they have to go through an interview with three or four board members. And that is a good practice, in my opinion. I mean, they go through and they can tell somebody is actually ready. They interview them, talk about their experience, and you can weed it. If you've been in a conversation with somebody, you can weed them out to see whether or not they're ready to, if they're ready to be a licensed surveyor.
Right, and that's at the board office?
Yes, they do that before. They do that. They interview the fundamental people who've passed the fundamentals and are applying to take the professional exam. They have a formal interview with them.
So the fundamentals, well, you had pointed out you can actually do that while you're still in school. So
that's correct.
There'll certainly be an interview there. But once you've met then whatever
the
requirements are for the interim experience, so to speak, then you go in. And I don't know if that's unique or not, but I'm not sure a lot of states do that.
I'm not aware of a lot of states doing it, but I know some do. But in this state, they do.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken,
well, we're right at our next break here in about 10 seconds, so the time flies, as everybody finds out when we're on the show.
No doubt.
So we'll go take that second break, and we'll be right back.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-4000. 1-800-288-0387 or go to quickstake.com. That's QUIKSTAKE.com and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back for our third segment today with Stan Ard and B.J. Roberts. And as is our normal protocol in the show, this is the time when our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, sponsors its Quick Stakes contest. First person to email in to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com will be our winner for the day. So, Stan, I'm going to have you answer the question that our listeners will have to repeat. So if you would tell us the name of the entity that you work for.
I work for the Louisiana Department of Transportation and Development, Skirt.
Louisiana Department of Transportation and Development. That's what we're looking for today. Thanks for participating in that. I appreciate it. Before we went away, we were on the topic of the exam, and we talked about a little bit about that during the break as well. And you all were talking about the whole interview process, and we were mentioning that there are some other states that do that. And I think y'all said there. Did you say Mississippi does it as well?
I applied as a committee, but I understand they possibly do. I'm not 100% sure of that for their first time applicants, not for people that have already licensed in other states.
Right. Well, that's something for people to keep in mind, obviously, if you're thinking about going around. And it seems in this day and age that more and more people are going for the multiple licenses. I think that's particularly become true in the last several years with all the work that's going on with the fracking and that kind of thing. People are seeking licenses in a lot of different states. That used to be a relatively uncommon thing. I mean, you'd usually maybe have a license in the state you live and maybe the one that borders you the closest, if you're
yes.
close to the line or something like that.
And that's my situation. I live right close to the state line. And then also, you know, always people think about Katrina, Mr. Kurt, you know, being a big influx of dollars in South Louisiana, but it also hit South Mississippi as well, in Biloxi and Gulfport. And we did a lot of work in that area, the firm I worked for in Livingston Parish. We're close to the border down there in the south part of the state. And we did a lot of work in South Mississippi after Katrina. It was a blessing to have that. The firm we had, you know, had several licenses in Mississippi, and we did a lot of work down there after the storm.
Yeah, one of my good friends has retired from Georgia Power, and they've got, I think they own an entity in Alabama, perhaps. But I know when those storms hit, all the power companies kind of worked together. And
yes.
he and a bunch of his folks went to Mississippi, actually, and spent a whole bunch of time down there. And he was telling me, you didn't hear nearly as much about Mississippi on the television, but it was quite devastating, what I understand.
It really was. There was a lot of money there after the storm, too, a lot with the casinos and all that wanting to rebuild. And that's what we did. We did a lot of construction layout and boundary surveys right there in the coastal area.
Right. Well, we've been talking about a whole bunch of things in terms of practice and that kind of thing. And the other thing we were talking about before we went to the break was exams. And one of the things I wanted to ask you all about, because it was part of the conversation when I was at that meeting there in Baton Rouge, and it's not a proposal. A lot of people think this is a proposal already, but it's not. It's just in discussion. So I guess a lot of folks look at that as a done deal, but it certainly isn't. But somehow the idea had come up about, you know, you as you pointed out, Stan, you can take the fundamentals, actually, when you're still in school, and then there are certain areas, at least within engineering, I'm not sure if all the areas, where they're talking about or maybe even come up with the idea that you could take the professional exam before you actually get your experience. And I was just curious about y'all's thoughts on that, having gone through the process of the education and going on and getting your license. And I just interested in what y'all's perspectives are of whether or not that's a good idea for surveying.
Well, Mr. Kerr, I totally disagree with it. There's only so much you can learn from a textbook, and a lot of what you learn for those exams is from that textbook. I really didn't learn survey until I got out in the field and started calculating on my own, and you get all the deeds to the property, and you figure out which ones have senior rights, junior rights, and experience is by far where you learn surveying, in my opinion, especially boundary surveying. It's real hard to, you can only learn so much from a textbook.
I agree with Stan. Like you say, you get that experience, and I think it really prepares you, wholly for the PS exam. From what I understand, the engineering profession, they are allowed to do the same in regards to taking their PE exam. And then I believe, from what I understand, the state will hold the license until they've met that experience requirement that they've got to meet. I don't want to stir up a bee's nest or anything, but I would like to. It's good for varying professions to I guess model each other. But I would like to see our profession stay independent. I personally believe we don't want to follow another profession's practices. Just because it is that profession in particular. Where we would stay individuals as a profession, and what we thought would benefit us as licensed land surveyors, maybe take those practices and put them in place.
Yeah, one of the things I always think about really isn't even related to the technical side of what we do, but there's so many people skills that are critical for surveyors, probably more so than anybody, because we're dealing with what's most precious to people when
no
we're
doubt.
Out there.
No doubt.
And being able to develop those people skills, I think, is a critical thing for becoming licensed as a surveyor. And you need some time to do that. Some people inherently have people skills, but the people skills you need to deal with people's treasured possession, their land, that's something that you need some time, I think.
No doubt. Whenever you deal with the public, and that's what we surveyors are. We serve the public. I mean, it's you have to have a people skills, whether it's working on highway department projects or just dealing with mom and pop. They're pawpaw died, and you're subdividing the property. Explaining those people the process, and we have to. Surveyors have to deal with the public in regard to municipalities getting councils to approve re-subdivisions.
Did I go off the air? Are you still with me, Stan?
I'm still here, Mr. Kurt.
I think my phone must have cut out because I lost you there for a second.
But
go ahead.
Surveyors in general are just great. Normally, a good surveyor is a great people person and is able to explain to that client or entity, whatever it may be, what the process is and what's going to happen. Most of the good surveyors are great people person.
Yeah, I'm sure BJ in the type of work you're doing, you see that regularly.
We do. You have to be able to relate to your clients and not necessarily just your clients, but they're adjacent landowners and so forth. And in some circumstances you may be required to diffuse some tension there between some property owners, which I would believe that that most surveyors in the private practice have had that experience.
There's some discussion going on now. It's not official discussion, but it's amongst a group of people that are pretty well informed about what we do as a profession, about looking for ways to allow surveyors to actually be more problem solvers than just presenters of facts. And, of course, when we go work for somebody, that doesn't necessarily mean we're their advocate. It means that we're trying to fix a problem, but we can't tilt things to, you know, to be their way.
That's right. That's right.
But nonetheless, there's some discussion about that, and I think there's some merit to it. You know, when people do develop those people skills, helping people solve those problems and not just say, well, you know, here's the facts, and you got a gap here, you got this problem over here, I hope you all have a good time figuring it out. I think there's some opportunity there for surveyors, and all the more important, I think, for us to build those interpersonal skills.
No doubt. And it's common practice in South Louisiana. If you have a judge that's not familiar with laws, he'll appoint a survey expert witness to assist him in, you know, settling the case, you know. Surveyors, we usually are more familiar with laws than really lawyers and judges are in regard to property law.
Say that. But you know, Stan, I was just thinking when BJ was talking about with you working for the Department of Transportation and Development and BJ in the private side, I guess it's a toss-up as to who the people out on the land distrust the most when they see us coming. You know,
it's got to be the state, Kurt.
The state's always out to get somebody. You know, you ought to see a lot of times when we do topographic surveys around gas stations, I get a hoot out of this. You know, a lot of times you have to locate the underground storage tanks. Just to know the information about them. We go, the faces you see when a guy from the state walks into a gas station and starts asking about underground storage tanks, it's interesting, boy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, as we got a couple minutes left before we go to our next break, but when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit with you all about societies. You know, each of our states has a surveying society. We're all kind of tied together nationally now, and there's a lot of consternation among people about that as well, about, you know, what's going to happen there. Are we still going to be strong? And clearly our societies have a big role to play individually and collectively. So I'm interested in y'all's perspectives on that. And then I'd like to hear your ideas about what you think's out there in the future. Another big thing that surveyors are concerned about is, you know, is technology going to replace the surveyor? Because the tools allow anybody to have some amount of skills, the right word, but at least the ability to use some of the instrumentation that's out there, particularly the handheld stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really interested in the way y'all think about that, too.
Those famous GIS surveyors.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, you know, there's some state laws now that are beginning to have characterizations of different types of surveyors. And then you look at what the overall licensing law says. It's pretty broad. Mm-hmm. And there's a discussion, I won't say disagreement necessarily, but a lot of discussion about, you know, if you came in one particular way, does that disqualify you from doing something else because your law allows, you know, different paths to licensure, so to speak. But I think in the long run, the licensing boards kind of take care of that because it's not likely, I don't think, that a licensing board is going to say to somebody, well, you've never done a boundary survey, but we're going to give you a license anyway.
No, that won't happen, I can tell you. As long as licensing boards are in effect, that's not going to happen, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I do see some ideas, some thoughts, that there may be categories where people can perform certain things, but not others, and that, you know, that might come up. But
yeah, we have a lot of that discussions as well. You know, it's the only difference between a civil engineer and a boundary surveyor and a land surveyor is we can do boundary work, and a civil engineer can't, you know?
Yep, that's true. Well, let's do our last break, and we'll be right back.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctor's conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back for our last segment with Stan Arden, B.J. Roberts today. And again, guys, thanks for being on the show. It's been a great conversation, and one that I think is important for our audience to hear perspectives from folks like you guys who are relatively new into the business, but certainly have been in long enough to grasp the importance of what we do. And as you were saying there at the break, BJ, that's, I guess we've got a real challenge for us here in our country, and I don't even know why it is necessarily that surveyors here in many cases don't garner the same respect as they do in other countries. You were mentioning France as something you'd heard on a radio show or something, and how highly surveyors are regarded. And like I said, I think that's true pretty much all over Europe. And so I'm not really sure what the answers are. Some people say it's because we've been slow in getting to the education side, and there's probably some truth to that, but I think it's more a fact that we have to prove what we talked about earlier. We have to prove that we are, we're honest, upright people, and we know how to deal with people's problems, and we help them. We're right. That's why people respect you, because you help them, right?
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for several years, for the longest past of the licensed land surveyor, it's I don't want to say that you've been able to get it through another profession, in regards to a lot of civil engineers just became licensed land surveyors as a little lanyard for their professionalism. I think some awareness in regards to our profession being a standalone profession and getting the public informed that we are a completely separate profession than some of our coworkers.
Yeah, one of the things I think along those lines is that all of us should be doing this, but clearly young folks like you two guys who are well-educated, you're articulate, you know how to talk to people, actually going out and reaching out to the community, because for so long, and even today, surveyors oftentimes won't do that. They won't go talk to their Kiwanis Club, or they won't go out and present the profession in a really positive way and help people understand that our job is to help them.
It's definitely it's something we need to do in more professional level, is get out and do outreach like that. I know our local LSPS district, we have older surveyors that go out and they'll volunteer and go out to Nichols. Last year I went out to Southern with the Louisiana Department of Transportation. We did a It was through a federal program where we mentored some young kids and told them about surveying and showed them some things. And we got a lot of positive feedback. But, it, you know, in a professional world, it's just when everybody's waiting for that phone to ring or busy doing projects, it is hard to do that, especially for young guys in the profession, for sure, starting out.
That's one of the places where I think as a national society and as our state societies, those are activities that we could create and make happen sort of as a group thing and not just depend on every individual going to do it, but set up programs to help people do those kind of things.
Well, NSPS had some great resources. Last year when we went and did that, I used one of the videos online on the website about that talked about surveying and the profession. It was very interesting, I tell you. We got a lot of positive feedback from it.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. We just need to keep creating those kind of opportunities.
No doubt.
That's for sure.
And so, getting that word to that young guy that comes, so when they find a young person that's good in math, good in science, and have interest to being outside, just communicating with those guidance counselors, let them know, hey, look, surveying's out there.
Another program we got that is pretty successful in attracting young people, or at least exposing them to what surveying's about, is that the Boy Scouts Merit Badge program.
Well.
And that a lot of people are doing that. They'll go out to a local Boy Scouts troop and help them with it. And, of course, the merit badge for surveying is one of the originals and one of the only ones still around that was an original. So opportunity.
Right. I was recently asked to do a little presentation on surveying and maybe talk about some closures and that kind of thing. Bring some equipment to a Boy Scout troop and so they could earn their merit badge.
So we got half of this segment still left, I guess. I'm interested in y'all's thoughts about the opportunity side, because again, some of the older ones obviously see all the things that's going on technologically and we're scared to death of it. But I just wonder what y'all's thoughts are on, where's the future going for us? What opportunities are out there?
I'm gonna start off, Mr. Kerr, by saying, for a young person getting in the profession is a really bright opportunity. I mean, the profession is going towards laser scanning for topographic type work. Mobile IDAR is an unbelievable tool. And also the other day, 2 weeks ago, I went into a demo with a drone. And I'm going to tell you what, the accuracies they were showing us and getting on that stuff, I'd never seen a quantity survey done as quick as I'd seen with that drone. And it's going to be, it's amazing the computer capacity you need to utilize these tools, millions and millions and millions of points in these point clouds, and you have to have a water-cooled computer to be able to handle that kind of data. But, it's definitely becoming a more computerized profession, just young people, when they get out, they're definitely going to be able to handle it. I mean, it's a lot of the schools are teaching that type of methods, and it's definitely going to, I think it's probably going to increase interest in the profession even more, being that it's going in that direction for young people.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and getting oneself prepared to take advantage, and I think that's where we are right now. We're between a group of folks who maybe didn't have the educational background or in the circumstance to be able to take advantage, but seeing that ahead of time and getting prepared to be able to put all of those tools in your kit, I think is critical.
That's definitely a bright future, though. It definitely is. I mean,
I'm sure BJ can tell us that, that's a great opportunity, but it also costs money, right, BJ?
It does.
That's right.
We actually, I don't want to say that we're falling behind in regards to technology, but one of the things I've mentioned at the focus group of the task force meeting that we were introduced at was you get into laser scanning and this kind of thing and aerial photography and mobile LIDAR and all these significantly more expensive endeavors. And for us, and we do a lot of in-house design. We talked to a guy. Well, you can take a scanner and you can shoot that bridge, and it's going to produce X amount of hundreds of thousands of points, and me personally, I'm just saying, well, I'll shoot the bridge deck and I'll shoot the low cord and locate the piles and do some topo under the bridge, and I've got just as much data as I need for design than you know, this hundreds of thousands of points. And cut down on the office side as well. So there's, you know, there's pros and cons to all this new technology and you know what we had talked about in regards to technology replacing the licensed land surveyor. I personally don't ever foresee that happening, because you know in my personal opinion, I mean, licensed land surveyors aren't defined by being expert measurers. You know, anybody can take a total station or what have you out, and as long as you have some technical education to you, I mean, some training, and go out and measure to the same accuracies as a professional land surveyor. There's no argument about that, but like I said, the measurement doesn't define our profession.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and the people get tired of hearing me say it. I say it all the time on the radio show, but just being able to use the equipment doesn't guarantee that you're going to do things correctly.
That's right.
It might allow you to, I always say, you put something very precisely in the wrong place.
Yeah.
But I was curious when we were talking earlier about outreach and those kind of things. Amanda Allred, who is in charge of our young surveyors group, when she saw y'all going to be on the show, sent me an email and said, I don't have any folks in Louisiana. I'd sure like to talk to those guys. So I don't know if she's contacted y'all yet or not.
She has. Ms. Kurt, when I got the email from you, I sent her an email personally and you know, asked how I could be of any assistance to NSPS and the profession. And she signed me up as one of the representatives for Louisiana, and I don't know if Stan has talked to her.
I saw the email, but it's been a typical Monday morning. I've been putting out brush fires all morning, so I hadn't gotten back with her yet. But I do intend to send an email back and check in with her.
Yeah, that I'd appreciate if y'all do that. And, you know, looking into the future, I see a lot of, we're talking about opportunities. One of the things that our profession is going to continue to need is really good, strong, forward-thinking leaders, and that's one of the reasons I was really interested in talking to you two guys, because I think there's a lot of potential there. Our societies need it. Our licensing board needs it. The profession itself needs it. So I just want to encourage you both to be as active as you can and lend your expertise and your thought processes to where we're going moving forward, because I think that's really what's going to make us successful, I think.
I agree.
I totally agree.
Well, we've almost to the end here, so I always like to spend a little bit of time and make sure I thank my guest for being on the show today. I appreciate you all both joining me. I know I kind of hit you broadsided there and came around pretty quickly when I first met you, but I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspectives today, because they are so critically important for the profession moving forward. So I don't know if you got any parting words of advice or your thoughts on anything that you'd like to share here in the last minute or so, but I'd appreciate it if you do.
Kurt, it's a bright future in surveying. You know, I talk to young guys all the time that are working towards getting their license, and I tell you, we got some young guys, really good guys coming up, and young ladies as well in South Louisiana, and there's no doubt the surveying profession is going to be in great hands.
Mr. Kurt, I'd like to I'd like to thank you for having me. I can speak for Stan when I say you know, it's been our pleasure to be on your show, and we appreciate everything that NSPS does for the profession. As far as, you know, words of advice, I would suggest to all young people thinking about surveying or newly licensed land surveyors to get involved in your, you know, in your society, you know, and any other organization that you think would benefit the, you know, the life of the profession. Like you say, it's extremely valuable.
It is. Just, you know, I've been involved in state society since the late 70s, and you meet so many great people. So, well, thanks again, guys. We're about out of time here, but I really appreciate you being with me today and sharing your thoughts. So, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us,
Mr. Kurt.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.